During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale. Right.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a getaway edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. And ESPN at 92.5. How you doing? Everybody good? Okay?
Guess what?
What's that?
Guess who had another day off because the Fort Bend school system decided to have another in-service day?
Cookie?
No, Taylor. Unbelievable the amount of time these schools... I didn't even know. I got home last night. Lisa didn't even know.
You didn't know this was coming?
No!
How does that happen?
Exactly, that too. But then I get home and Lisa goes, and Taylor goes, you know I don't have school tomorrow, Dad. I go, what? She goes, yeah, it's another in-service day. There's enough service time for these teachers that they could be like a general in the Army by now. I don't understand how much service time. Good Lord.
Yeah, I feel like you should have known that.
Well, I feel like I didn't. I feel like it's pretty obviously that I didn't. And because I figured we were about done with all the time off.
Yeah. Did you see this Schultz bomb? Schultz is over here fighting with Rappaport. Would win in a fight. He towers above Rappaport, who is would be the coxswain on a rowing team. We learned that yesterday. Schultz reported that the Commanders and the Texans have had significant interest in trading. I think that's a critical word there. Trading for 49ers wide receiver Deebo Samuel, with talks progressing in recent days. Always a 10% chance a report is wrong at minimum. It could be 90% that this report is wrong. The trading is an interesting angle in this one, mm-hmm. because now you are absorbing the contract of Deebo Samuel. I imagine he would probably want a contract extension, which I don't know how I feel about that. Now the Texans did trade for Diggs last year and then kind of tore up his old deal and made it a 1 year deal. So if we're assuming that this report is true and that the Texans are interested in Deebo, and D'Amico kind of alluded to it the other day, we're always interested in good football players. Is this something that excites you, scares you? Are you motivated to buy? Are you not interested? Where are you at with this?
You know, we talked about this the other day, and when I think about it, it's like if I'm thinking of a possible guy that could be the number two or the 1B to Nico's 1A, it's not Deebo Samuels to me. It's someone that's more of a dynamic playmaker on the outside, maybe, or I think Debo's best days as a wide receiver are behind him. I just don't believe that he's going to be even to the level of Diggs when we made the you know, either or discussion yesterday. And so the fact that you have to give something up, and I don't think you'd have to give up a ton to get him because he's already got that contract. But to me, it doesn't excite me at all. I mean, we mentioned too that D'Amico, the way his soundbite was, that he would be interested in a guy like Deebo. That was the first kind of notation to be a little bit, you know, alert on this might happen. But I'm not interested.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised to hear you say that about Deebo, because you picked Deebo over Diggs, right?
Yeah, I think because I'm worried about Diggs' injury. I would take Deebo over Diggs if I had to take one or the other. But I'm just not excited about Deebo if there's other guys out there that you could possibly get. Plus, they need the financial resources so that they could pay an offensive line and other players too.
Yeah. See, trying to, like, I'm not crazy about this. I don't know if Debo's the guy that you really want. Now, I do think Deebo fits, like, if we try to, like, look at this optimistically. I do think Deebo is a pretty decent fit in the Kaylee scheme, assuming that it's a little bit of New England, a little bit of L.A. I think he's, at this point, more of an inside receiver, which I think the Texans need more inside than outside help. You have Nico. Nico can do both, but I think he's better outside than he is inside. So I do think that Deebo is someone who can fit into the scheme. He would immediately be their second-best receiver, mm-hmm. too. Now, is this the best way to spend your financial resources? I would argue that it's not, but I will defend the Texans here a little bit. And look, maybe this doesn't even happen. And it also kind of depends on what the contract situation they do with Debo. But Debo, really, he has void years on this deal, but he really has 1 year left on his deal for a cap number of $16 million. That's not insane. Like, if we're assuming the Diggs and Cooper Kupp and, you know, like if Devontae Adams gets released, like those guys are going to be somewhere between, we think, the $20 to $25 million range. If he's at $16 million and we're not talking about some sort of contract extension, which, like, if he wants a contract extension, that might be the deal breaker. But you get him on a one-year $16 million deal, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And then on top of that, you also probably need to be like a Joe Mixon type of trade where you're trading a sixth rounder for Debo Samuel and a seventh rounder. I don't want it to be a Diggs type of trade where you're trading for a second. If they traded a second for Debo Samuel, I would be pretty upset. If they traded a fourth rounder for Debo Samuel, I'm not sure I would love that either. So Mixon trade, not Diggs trade. I don't want Debo, but I can live with a late round pick swap and then no extension to the contract. Let them play out that 1 year deal. That's the only way that I'm willing to accept it.
No, I'm a little surprised that it's as low as that, because I thought, I was anticipating that he was kind of close to what Diggs was going to want, and I was anticipating it to be around $20 million a year. That's not that bad, but yeah, if that's all they have to give up, if because that word trade is scary, right? Because you're giving away a resource or resources that you know, would be led to believe is going to help this team next year and somewhere down the road. If you only have to give up a seventh round pick, a sixth round pick, you get it off of their books, you get it to your books. Until we're talking extension, which like we normally do in a trade like this, we're probably going to be looking at him wanting one. But if you can get him for just that, and then you let the process take care of itself with him joining the team, and then you figure out the rest of it, I'm okay with 16. That's fine.
16, 1 year. I don't want an extension, and I don't want to trade higher than... Oh, yeah, I know. And if he does, then I'm sorry, Debo, you can go to Washington. You can go be the number two for Scary Terry. This is not a negotiation. Like, you can come with us and play for a year on that final year of the deal. I'm not trading more than a six-round pick, but that's it. That's it. If San Francisco demands more, see ya. Hang up the phone. If Debo Samuel says I'm not playing on that 1 year deal, see ya. Hang up the phone. I'm not negotiating with him. It's a trade, sixth round or less, and it's play out the final year of the deal. That's it. Otherwise, it's a deal breaker.
Yeah, I'm willing to let the details dictate how I would respond to it. If it's the exact situation that you laid out, Jeremy, where you're giving up a six or seven rounder and it's 1 year, $16 million, I could stomach that. But I just don't think that's realistic, both because I think he gets more in return for his team than what Joe Mixon did, just because of the position and the ages of the player. Like, people are going to pay more for a running or a wide receiver at this age than they would a running back in my age, in my estimation. I think this is more like a fourth or a fifth round pick, which obviously hurts a little bit more than the seventh given up for Mixon. And I don't think he's coming here and being in going along with this unless he's getting a contract extension. So if the Texans were to play hardball on that point, I think the deal falls apart there.
Fine.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it, because that, like, the scenario you laid out, the 1 year, give up a seventh, $16 million, that's the only way I could accept this, because frankly, I think Debo's leaning towards washed. He's had one great year as a pure wide receiver, and it was 2021. It's been a few years. Otherwise, he's been, I don't know, up and down. He's been a little bit injured, banged up. I'd be out on this if it's anything more than what you laid out.
Yeah, and I think I'd be okay with it at that price, though. Sixth rounder, play out the contract. Okay, give me Debo in a contract year. It's a cheap rental. He's going to be cheaper than his caliber of receiver out in the free agency market. It makes sense from that aspect.
And even though I'm out on Debo, because this is maybe a down wide receiver year as far as the draft, I will accept that whatever level Debo's at currently is likely more than you get out of the first wide receiver you pick in the draft this year. So if the Texans are looking at this year and not having a more long-term mindset in mind, I could see them trying to piece it together for this year, seeing that Debo, more so than a late first or a second-round wide receiver, will give them more production in 2025.
The other aspect, too, if you don't extend the deal and it's just a one-year deal, then that doesn't exclude you from drafting a receiver at 25.
Yeah, you can do both.
Well, and free agency is going to happen before the draft, right? So, like, you kind of want to cover your tail before you enter the draft, because you can't just sit there and be like, yeah, a Mickey Egbuka is going to fall to us at 25, or we're going to need to trade up to get a Egbuka. You don't know how the draft is going to play out. So you make sure that you bring in your number two receiver. In this case, it'd be Debo Samuel. Debo Samuel, a one-year deal wouldn't prevent you from drafting a receiver at 25. If one of those guys you love falls to you, cool, take that receiver. He's your wide receiver three for a year, and then he's immediately your wide receiver two next year. They did the same thing with Blake Fisher. They drafted Blake Fisher in the second round thinking he would be a starter in year two or the future. They didn't draft him thinking he'd be a starter in year one. So even trading for Debo does not exclude you from drafting a receiver at 25.
No, and I like that. If you look at it and say, hey, look, as we saw as they went into the season last year, if he's your top three receivers, we're going to be Nico, Diggs, and Tank. And now you know that Diggs is coming off injury and he's a free agent. You know, Tank's probably not going to play all next season. If you could tell me, hey, would you take as a solution to Diggs and Tank the first round pick used for a wide receiver after getting Debo Samuel for at least a year, like you said, I'm great with that. I think that's more than enough. That's loading back up a wide receiver room to give CJ everything that he needs. I'd be all in on that for the 1 year, knowing that the receiver three, like you said, is going to be receiver two after that.
So it's unanimous. None of us would extend him.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. I would use Debo to buy a year for Tank to get back. Like kind of like what you laid out. Like this year, you trade for Debo. If it's what you laid out, the 1 year, the $16 million for a low-round pick, have him as your two, draft a wide receiver. You say goodbye to Debo after 1 year, then it's, you know, Nico, the receiver you drafted, and Tank's coming back.
For a year. Yeah. I mean, Tank would be in the final year of his deal in 26.
Yeah, so you buy a year for Tank to get back because, like Joel said, he's 99% not going to be back this season.
All right, so we're out on an extension for Debo. What
yes.
is the what is the most you would trade for him? Would you go up to a
six.
Fifth?
No.
I would.
Yeah, I'm out anything better than a sixth.
Really?
Would you go to a fourth?
No, not at all.
You draw the line at the fifth.
Yeah, but
I think it's one round difference.
Fifth is, you know, I think you're talking about fringy NFL guy. I think that special teams, you're hoping he develops into something. Maybe it's an offensive lineman because offensive linemen you can get in the fifth, sixth rounds and they can turn into something. But if it means that I wrap up my receiver room that quickly, then yeah, I'm willing to do it.
Yeah. I mean, they probably, I think it is a valid. I wouldn't be comfortable giving more than a six, but it is valid. And they're also not in a great position. Like, their receiver room right now for the start of next season, yes, there's work to do, is Nico, John Mechie, Xavier Hutchinson. And they probably have some, like that Jared Wayne guy is probably going to reserve future deal or whatever. But those are your three guys that you think would be on your NFL roster. Free agency, it's out of your control. Like, it's out of your control once you enter free agency, and the Texans aren't in great financial situations. They have the 25th pick of the draft. It's out of your control what's going to fall to you at number 25. So I do think that there is a benefit and a positive and a pro. Let me just rattle off all the synonyms here. There is a positive to making sure that you have a pairing with Nico Collins early in free agency. And at $15 million, you're probably getting that caliber receiver at a discounted rate.
Yeah, and see, what was really the most valid of everything that you said, 16. Too, is the fact that you don't know what you don't know about the draft, right? Because we've seen how many times that we can see, you know, 18 million mock drafts that say Ebuka is going to be available at 20, you know, when they pick. And then all of a sudden, you know, draft day, things change. People shuffle. They move up. Even during the draft, things are going to happen. And you can't guarantee that guy, if that's your only guy, is going to be available for you to add to your wide receiver room. So you got to shore up two guys. And then even if you can't get another one in the draft, and I assume they could, but even if you can't, then you can still use free agency to get a veteran that's still out there on a cheaper deal that might be able to fill that third spot.
It's hard to do that post-draft, though.
I'm saying leading into the draft, right, yeah, you can still see who's out there. But right, post-draft, you're right. Then it would be tougher to see. Most of the guys are going to be snapped up.
I wish they would flip it. I actually like the draft ahead of free agency.
I do, too.
That's the way it is in the NBA.
Yeah, it's never been that way in the NFL, but I would like it more, I think.
Yeah, adding on to Joel's point, I think in particular it's important because if you go into the draft without adding someone like a Debo and without adding your wide receiver too, then obviously the other 31 teams all know when it gets to the Texans spot, oh, that's probably a wide receiver. And we've seen this happen to the Texans before, not necessarily with Caserio, where everyone knows, well, okay, this is what they need. And then the teams who also need wide receiver try to target the spot right before you to take that player away from you. So I think it's important to not look as so desperate for a position going into a draft.
Yeah, it's like an additional point to it, right? Like it maybe opens you up even more to be best available than position specific. Not that I think Caserio would be position specific, but I do think it allows him a little bit more freedom there. So I could be talked into it. Mega Blast, I wouldn't give up any pick under fifth or sixth for a guy that has always hurt, is only signed to a one-year deal. Valid about the always banged up thing. That is true, even though he's played in more games than I thought he did. But the one-year thing's actually, I think, a benefit. I don't want 3 years of Deebo Samuel. I want the one-year bridge deal to your future at the position. A texter says, heck no to Deebo. So one person's angle there. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Deebo in a Texans uniform, yay or nay. 713-780-ESPN. It is a busy show. It is a Friday, so we'll play Who Said It. We'll try to go for four in a row. We'll be buzzkilling some things a little bit later.
I've
seen if you caught on. Jalen Green, disrespected again. I think Cal McNair sold the script of his life to a Netflix show. We'll discuss that later. But also the script to Jose Altuve in left field. I don't know if you guys saw it, but out in West Palm Beach, Jose Altuve made his left field debut in a real game today. 713-780-3776. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN97.5. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Texter says, as a teacher, I can tell you in-service days are the worst. We're stuck in these pointless meetings all day, literally watching paint dry. We would rather have the children there. I can't imagine that's true.
I can't. Maybe one or two were like early in the year. I can't imagine with the amount of service days that they get that they're all like that.
I much rather be in a pointless meeting watching paint dry.
Oh, that part of it.
Than having kids in the classroom.
I don't know.
Love my kid. Don't like other people's
kids. If you're an experienced teacher and you know how to handle kids, then I think you probably, especially because those meetings, just hearing it secondhand from my wife and my mom. Like, those meetings most of the time are telling you stuff you've already known for 15 years, so it's pointless for them.
Give me my isolation, nobody around me, listening to a dumb meeting, and then kids banging down the wall. Give me the latter,
You think it's Shawshank?
I don't, yeah, dude, oh, these kids nowadays, they rule the classroom.
Oh my God, we got an email sent home the other day for fourth graders. That text messages during school time were now going to be banned because of inappropriate material on the text messages and inappropriate comments.
I'm surprised it wasn't already banned. They can text during class?
I guess between classes? I don't know. Maybe some kids were still trying to do it during class, but then I guess they were getting sassy during in the text.
Yeah, see, I mean, obviously this is partly an age thing because we had cell phones when I was in high school, but they were far more primitive than they are now. But I can't imagine teachers would be cool with you whipping out your iPhone and texting during class.
Good luck trying to keep a room full of people off of their phone.
Good point.
Yeah. Like,
good point.
I think you're undervaluing how awful classrooms are these days.
I mean, I know it secondhand. My wife's a teacher. I mean, it's not.
What grade does she teach?
Well, it's little kids. It's kindergarten.
What district?
Oh, right now she's at a private school, but she had been at HISD for 10
why
years.
That's why she's cool with it. How did she like HISD?
Well, at first she liked it, and then they made some changes, and then not as much.
Teachy, man. My wife got out of teaching. She couldn't stand it anymore.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. She's like, I'm out of here.
I'll tell you who I would really feel for these days is a substitute.
Well,
they come in and they get 10 times more than the regular
teacher.
Kids are
horrible to substitutes even when I was a kid.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's always a thing.
Tay says 100% wrong. Service days for teachers are awful. So are kids. Kids are also awful. I don't know. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Somebody said in-service day / everybody's hungover from the barbecue cook-off yesterday. I guess it opened up yesterday, the cook-off did. Mm-hmm. Today's Go Texan Day. Where's your Texas gear?
Where's yours?
I'm wearing it. What do you mean, where's mine?
That's Texan gear?
You don't see this? Gear? Look, it's a cowboy hat. It's cowboy boots with a spur. It's a cowboy riding a horse. It's the state of Texas. Yes.
Oh, that Prince and Tuck. Yes.
On a shirt that looks like you're going to dinner with
Oil Derek
with Jimmy Buffett.
I wouldn't wear that.
I wouldn't think that's a Texas shirt.
I'd have to get uncomfortably close to you to be able to know that there was a
state of Texas on it.
Yeah, but how close would I have to get you to actually know that?
Yeah.
Okay, I just told you. And now, is there any argument that it's a Go Texan shirt?
Sure. It doesn't look like if you're walking down the street because of how small the print is, I would never guess you're in Go Texan gear.
Okay, but now that I've told you, can we all agree that it is Go Texan gear?
Sure. Ish. Sure.
Where's your Go Texan gear?
I didn't wear it.
Brian, where's your Go Texan gear?
I don't have
any. Day to day. Normally, my daughters go to school normally dressed for it.
Yeah.
And since they didn't have school, I didn't know that it was Go Texan.
Actually, I sent my daughter to school in Go Texan.
But I didn't
gear.
Know that it was in service day to day either. So, it's on me again.
Blankers has an excuse. He's from Wisconsin. Brian, you have no excuse.
Yeah, born and raised here.
You have no excuse.
I just don't care.
You don't care about Texas.
I don't care about Go Texan day.
Don't care about the Lone Star State. Can you believe this guy? You have the excuse. I give you a pass because you're what do they call you guys?
Foreigners.
Wisconsinites. Mm-hmm. You're Wisconsinites.
Yankee.
You're not a Texan. Brian's a Texan.
And here's
and he
thing.
Doesn't have Texan gear on.
Lisa goes all out for the girls for Go Texan Day when they're in school. But, because Taylor's not in school today, there was no need to get the boots out and the hat out and the Texas dress and all the other things that they have. So
I will say my daughter went to school with a Western shirt on, so there's a little bit represented.
I was looking for my I was gonna wear the boots and the jeans, and then I got lazy. So I better not do that. I was also gonna wear
so
my
you half-assed Texan today?
Yeah, I did. I was gonna wear this polo with my oil and gas vest with some jeans and my cowboy boots, but I got out of the shower. I was like, I don't want to do that. I'll just wear the polo. That's good enough.
Lazy.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have any Texan gear. You have no room to talk.
No, I'm fully admitting I'm lazy.
Yeah. And another Texan, or at least he's been in Texas for a long time, Jose Altuve. He played in left field today. Mm-hmm. Jose, do you realize how good he was in left field today?
No, because it wasn't on TV.
It was streaming online.
He was watching it.
Oh, it was
streaming
online.
It wasn't on TV,
okay,
though.
Okay, it wasn't on broadcast.
Yeah, it wasn't on the shin. It was streaming on MLB.TV. I did watch it. I wanted to see how Jose Altuve looked like in left field. He was flawless out there, Blankers.
Because he didn't get a play.
Didn't touch the baseball.
Perfect game plan.
But that's what they want. Like, that's why they moved Jose Altuve to
that's
left field.
That's the point.
So, like, the ball gets out of his hand. Like, they're hiding him in left field. And Hunter Brown was pitching two innings, bunch of ground balls. Like, that's the purpose of moving him to left, is so he doesn't touch the baseball, is to try to hide his bad defense. And look, that's not going to happen all the time, and I'm excited to see what it looks like in left. But I already know the script of how it's going to all play out for Jose Altuve. This is what's going to happen at some point this year, probably every game. He's going to make mistakes. He will not be perfect. His mistakes are going to be criticized by everybody. See, this is why Jose Altuve shouldn't be in left field. So every time he makes a mistake, it's going to be criticized. Dana Brown, Joe Espada, anybody that defends the move to left field, they're going to be scrutinized as well when Jose Altuve makes a mistake. And then at the end of the day, Altuve's defensive metrics are going to be better in left field than they are at second base. That is already the script. That's how it's going to play out to a T.
Yeah, I think, the more that I see him out there and then you're hearing people talk, look, I'm not going to discredit the fact that he is a really good athlete and that he is, he's quick, he's agile. Yes, he's small, but I think that from the standpoint of tracking down baseballs and doing enough, I expect that he's going to get better throughout the year. I expect that just, like anything else, like we talk about when coaches get their first head coaching gig, they're probably going to have some mishaps. They're probably going to do some things that they're going to have to learn from. But as the season progresses, so is their ability to have a firm grasp on everything. I believe by the end of the year, he's going to hold his own in left field.
Oh, I think so.
I my biggest concern is his arm.
I don't think he's going to be a good left fielder. Like, let's be very clear. I don't think he's going to be a good left fielder. I think he'll be less bad at left than he will at second.
I mean, you say that, but I think that there's a lot of guys that are, for lack of a better term, trying to be hidden out in the outfield, right? Teams just dump them out there. I think that aside from the fact that I'm really concerned about his arm, I believe that he, because of his speed and the ability to get to some baseballs, the bigger thing to me is I think he's going to dive sometimes when he probably shouldn't and make some mistakes like that too, like trying to field a ball, caroms and things off of walls. But I think he'll hold his own. I think he'll be an average outfielder.
You think he'll be a neutral outfielder?
I think he'll be close to neutral, yes.
So, okay. He moved the goalpost.
Okay, I'll be close to 50%. Okay, 50% of the outfielders in Major League Baseball, I think he'll be hovering right around there.
Well, that doesn't help your argument. I think you have to stick specifically to left. Because center fielders are going to naturally have like more value just because they play center field, and they're generally better than left fielders. So I think for like the sake of your argument, you have to hold him accountable to only left fielders. Like, I don't know how many left fielders in baseball qualify for, like, you know, the end of season stuff. Probably like 20. Like, there's probably not 30 everyday left fielders. So probably 20. Like, is Jose Altuve going to be a top 10, 15 defensive left fielder? I don't think so. I think he'll be bottom half.
I think it'll be close. I think he'll hover between 15 and 20.
Okay. Yeah, it'd be fun to see. Like, I have no idea. Like, he was out there today. He didn't do anything today. What percentage of games do you think he plays in left? Starts. And you can't go full games because, like, injuries could come into play here. But what percentage of his starts do you think he'll be in left field as opposed to second?
80%.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty high.
I mean, when you saw what we saw in terms of what Julia Morales the other day tweeting out the fact that he literally, she said, here's a picture of Jose Altuve's outfielder's glove, which happened to be a Marwin Gonzalez glove, which is a little ironic. Mm. But she said his quote was something to the effect of, I'm an outfielder now. I gave away my infield glove to a kid today. If he's giving away, because infielders in their gloves, that's a really special bond. And that, to me, that says a lot in the fact that he is going to play predominantly in left field.
Feels performative to me.
I think he gave away his glove, but these dudes have 15 gloves.
Yeah, he could get another glove.
They have boxes of gloves, especially at spring training. Like, just, these glove manufacturers. It feels very performative.
I believe Altuve is a great guy, so it's not like he's never done anything for kids, but this feels performative to me.
Think of the kids.
Yeah.
He's not the face of Sunshine Kids, though.
No, that's Biggio.
It's Biggio. Yep. No, I believe that he gave away his glove to a kid. 100% believe that. But he also has 24 gloves in his clubhouse in West Palm Beach.
No, yeah, I get it. But, I mean, yeah, you're right. He might have given away his third backup glove or something like that. But I just think that with all of the way he's taking this as a challenge, that I think that it's really kind of given him a little more pep in his step, and it's energized him a little bit. I think he wants to be the starting left fielder for this team.
Well, I think so, too. Yeah, I think it's rejuvenated him since. Now, he was 0-for-3 today, though, so I am worried about his bat. I think moving to the positions is going to put too much stress on him. It's going to put way too much on his plate. I don't think he's going to be able to handle it mentally, and I think it's going to affect his offensive performance.
You say that fully
sarcastic.
I know, but what's funny about you saying that even firmly slash S is there's going to be people that make that argument if he struggles a little bit at the plate to begin the year.
I think you're right.
Like, oh, he's focused. He's trying to learn the new defensive position. It's in his head. He's not able to focus on the bat. It's the wear and tear, blah, blah, blah. There's going to be people that make that argument. I don't look forward to it, but it'll happen. If he starts slow.
I think it's in play. His offense regressed last year.
Yeah.
It did.
But I just think...
He went from a 151 OPS plus to a 126 OPS plus. His chase rate was up. His walk rate was down. His strikeout rate was up. Like,
we were just
talking
about
this. He's going to be 35. Like,
with somebody else in some other situation where, thanks to Twitter in large part, people, you're right, Brian, they are going to blame, if he gets off to a slow start, they are going to blame the change of position.
Oh, no doubt.
And that's unfair, but that's the reality that we're in.
And that will be tired, and what should be wired if that were to happen is that he's 35 years old. That's what should be the take.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, I mean, he's also one of those guys that no one believes is ever going to get old. They just believe that because at his age, he's still doing what he's doing.
Well, they've already written in ink that he's going to get to 3,000 hits. Like,
right.
Not factored. I mean, I think he probably gets there if he plays to win how long Biggio played, but to say it's like 100% certainty feels a little far-fetched because you don't factor
40,
in injury
right?
and regression.
I don't think he gets there with his current contract.
No, I agree. Like, you'll have to play to win Biggio played, like, which will take him beyond that contract.
Whenever he signed his deal, this is going to keep Altuve in an Astro uniform for the rest of his career. I don't think this is his final contract.
He's one more. Yep.
And maybe he does play with all of his years with the Astros, but this isn't his final deal.
No, we'll need another year or two to get to 3,000, yeah. Probably.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Altuve, you saw Altuve in left today. Some of you might have seen Altuve in left today. Flawless, flawless defensive performance with Jose Altuve in his left field debut. How many games, what percentage of his starts will be in left field? How do you think he performs out there as well? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Look at Brian playing some bangers. Texan, Go Texan Day means you wear Western cowboy attire, not a polo shirt with the state of Texas printed on it so small that you have to get close to you to know what it is. Don't start banging on the only one of the three of us that's appreciating and respecting our great state.
You are a little bit of a t-shirt cowboy today.
It's a polo.
I know, but I'm making the joke, the t-shirt fan, t-shirt cowboy. It's a little bit, it is more than me.
So polo's on a different tier than t-shirt. T-shirt fans, the worst. Polo fans,
I don't know, but for the cowboy culture, though, I don't think polo is better. How many people out on the range wearing a polo?
There's a good
I
amount.
Think a lot of guys on the range have a collared shirt.
Yeah, they're collared, collared shirt. Shirt. Usually a button-up.
Yes.
But they'll wear the collared shirt.
Yes.
Absolutely they
yeah,
will.
Yeah, collared, not polo.
No, so absolutely they'll wear the polo. Not as often. Not as often, but they will for sure.
Flannels on the and long sleeve for yeah, Oxford's for sure. First. Yep.
Absolutely that's first, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, how are you banging on me? Blankers from Wisconsin don't have any Texas gear. Brian from Texas
no one
wearing
said
all
I
black.
Don't. I'm not wearing it today.
Not today. Not today.
I have Texas day, and you already gave me a pass,
today.
And now you're banging back.
I'm not banging back. I say from Wisconsin. You have a pass. Brian does not. I can't be banged on here. I'm the only one
Brian,
of the three of us that
crazy.
Has any sort of Texas gear.
Do you have Texas Tech Go Texans type
he's got a,
gear?
No, he's got I a mean, burn I've orange got, shoe t-shirt.
I've got burn orange shirts, but no.
He has
no.
to have those, though, because he's a
I'm
t-shirt,
a t-shirt fan.
Fan,
obviously, yeah. But no, like I don't have any Go Texan gear.
But if, like, you would have been told and say we got a memo, everybody should dress up for Go Texan.
I would have had to go buy stuff or not do it.
Man. We're going to have to kick you out. How do you feel about living in Oklahoma?
I would hate it. I would hate it.
We'll settle for Dallas.
Last time I went to the rodeo, it was in the Astrodome. I'll put it that way.
Really?
Yep. ZZ Top, 2002.
It's been a while since I've been to, actually. A long time, actually. I don't like the crowds. I don't like the crowds. XX, sorry, Brandon, a collared shirt doesn't qualify as Texan gear. I am the closest of the Killer Bees to Go Texan Day. That is indisputable. That is not up for argument. That is a fact, not opinion.
It's almost like you're saying you're the tallest guy over 5'5", though. It's not really...
What'd you say?
You're the tallest guy over 5'5". All right, cool, you're 5'7", but you're still short.
You got taller than Rappaport.
Okay, good point.
That's our new measuring stick.
Yeah, the Twitch is having a conversation about Altuve's approach at the plate. Great. What do you think of Altuve's approach at the plate?
I have no problem until I see regular season, and if he falters, then we can start trying to critique it. I don't believe that there's any problems with Jose Altuve's approach at the plate.
I'm not a huge fan of the dude swinging at three straight pitches that are a foot off the plate.
Today?
No, I'm talking about
in general.
Yeah, last year he was flailing more than the normal
Jose
Altuve.
Yeah, there are times, but he still hit. What, close to 300?
Right at 300? Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
But he went from a 915 OPS to a 790 OPS. His strikeout rate went up. His walk rate went down. His chase rate went up. Everything was regressing. I think he started thinking about 3,000 hits. And he knows that, well, I better swing the bat if I want to get 3,000 hits.
I mean, maybe that's true, but I think, you know, there's frustration, no question about there are times that he looks like Jeremy Pena chasing breaking pitches that are half a batter's box away from the plate. But I believe that his ability and his approach to hitting is still, I mean, if you hit 295 for me, you're good. And he's got pop. I mean, he's still got pop. So I don't have a lot to complain about with Jose Altuve.
So you're good with him swinging at three straight pitches off the plate?
Look, when that happens, am I good with it? No. But am I saying overall, am I good with Jose Altuve batting leadoff for the Houston Astros? Absolutely.
I don't think his approach has ever been good. He's always not been selective. He swings at everything. He's never been selective. It improved. It got better. And then last year, it like went the other way again. I'm not a huge fan of his approach. Obviously, he's the greatest Astro of all time, like both things can be true. Greatest Astro of all time is a bit of a free swinger. Both things are true. Mm-hmm. Vlad Guerrero is a free swinger. I love Vlad Guerrero, but both things can be true. Vlad Guerrero swung at pitches that bounced to the plate. He also got base hits off of pitches that bounced to the plate. So that, you know, both things true, I think. Texter, how close to Michael Brantley will Altuve be? I wonder if he means defensively.
Yeah, I think he means defensively.
I don't think he'll be as good as Brantley defensively.
I think people sleep on the fact that Brantley, even in his elder years, his last couple of years here, I mean, we all remember the play, the heroic diving play against the Yankees. Brantley could play. His arm was decent, too. I think he was fundamentally sound. I don't think Brantley was a bad defender.
Yeah, he's he got older and he like lost some range, but I thought he was an underrated defender, especially like in his younger days. He got older, lost range, but I think Altuve is going to struggle with like some of the angles and mm-hmm. like the arm will be an issue. I don't really worry too much about arm in left field. I think you can hide a bad arm in left, but won't have a good arm. Like that's a fact.
I just think like, you know, I mentioned earlier, if he's charging on balls and the way he even tried to control every fly ball in the infield, he's going to try and catch every single fly ball, and I think he's going to get caught. And
outfielders are supposed to do that, though.
I understand that, but I mean, at a certain point, you realize I'm not going to get there. You pull up and you save the extra base. You keep the ball in front of you. You let it bounce. You pull up.
Oh, you're saying he's going to like try to dive?
Yeah, I think he's going to be diving, trying to catch everything, and I think balls are either going to get by him or it's going to cost him a base here or a base there.
See, I think that stuff's going to happen a good amount, too. Like, both for his aggressiveness and then also like the lack of experience mm-hmm. playing there. But at the same time, I'm willing to live with that as opposed to having it at a more premium defensive position like second base. Texter coming to you live from Mardi Gras in Galveston. I'm excited for this Astros team. I think they're better than last year. And Altuve is a baller. I'm optimistic he'll be serviceable at the very least. See, I think he'll be serviceable too. I think he'll be below average but serviceable defensively. And I do think it's the lesser of two evils. Have you ever done the Mardi Gras in Galveston?
I have not either.
Wonder how big they go.
Oh, it goes.
If New Orleans is at a 10, how high do you think Galveston Mardi Gras
is? I mean, it consumes the island. The island is totally.
But the party, like the turn up. Like, I mean, it's a 10 for New Orleans. Like, how big of the party do you think it is in Galveston?
I think it's a 7.5 at least. Seven. And it's a Tillman backed weekend. I mean,
it's probably a 10 then.
Yeah, he does the parade. He does. I mean, they do it out. They do it right.
Do you guys have any interest in that on the usual year to year?
I don't. Like I, don't.
I really
I've
don't.
Never been in. Yeah, that's right. Crowds.
They even televise it. The parade. Yeah, they televise the parade. Remember, because it was it last year or the year before? Frank
Can
Billy,
they, though? Because wouldn't there be problems with things, you know, for need for censorship?
Well, remember, down the road, yeah, I don't think that they were looking at these, but I think that from the standpoint of Frank Billingsley before he retired, I think it was 2 years ago, that was when the Rockets had a chance at Wembanyama.
Right.
And that's
right.
Where Tillman gave the soundbite that everybody used the rest of the freaking
He was
season.
At Mardi Gras when he gave that's right.
Come on, Victor. We want Victor.
He said pray for Wimby.
Oh, there you go. Something
pray
like
for
that.
Victor. Might be Victor.
I think it was Victor,
Pray for Victor, pray for Wimby. I think it was Victor. King of Twitch says Galveston Mardi Gras is the second largest, not even half of NOLA. I was in New Orleans once on Bourbon Street during All-Star Weekend. Oh man, it was so crowded.
Oh my God.
Shoulder to shoulder. It was nuts.
Super Bowls and Mardi Gras in New Orleans, you're going to see, and it is, you're going to see everything, and it is a zoo.
I had no interest in going to Bourbon Street, just like we went there for our anniversary. This has been like 6-7 years ago. It was just a regular day in June. I had no interest in going Bourbon. I can't imagine during All-Star Weekend.
I like going to Bourbon, but not when it's super crowded.
It's just like I can go get a drink somewhere where I don't have to step over puke and deal with, you know, just angry drunks. Like
I don't know, man. Brian, if you're going to get a hand grenade and step over drunks and see puke everywhere and need to throw away your shoes, the best place to do that's on Bourbon Street.
What part of that was supposed to be appealing? I know you said it fully tongue-in-cheek,
but cat's meow, the dueling piano
get
bar.
Hurricane at Pat O'Brien's.
Pat O'Brien's. They do the piano at Pat O'Brien's, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
hard
karaoke
pass.
At the hard cat's pass. Meow. Not into that.
No,
huh?
I haven't done karaoke in over a decade, so hard pass.
We'll make fun of Bregman when he sucks at second base. I don't want Bregman to be any good. I'm a hater. I'll admit. I have no problem admitting that. Oh, you're a hater. Yeah, I am. I am a hater. I want Bregman to be awful in Boston.
And he's still taking ground balls at third, too.
Yeah, so is Devers.
Yeah, I saw him. They were both there. It's like interesting to see that dynamic.
Has anyone considered due to his height limitations, Altuve will have an extra half second to get the ball?
Wait, hold on, what?
I have not considered that, but it is worth investigating. Because, you know, he's shorter.
Okay.
So his glove's going to be down here, as opposed to if he's Aaron Judge, his glove would be up here. So he's got more time to adjust to the ball.
He also,
If you catch a ball up here, it's quicker. If you catch a ball down here,
sure,
it's slower.
We're talking
half a second, probably not accurate.
No,
it might be like a tenth of a second.
A tenth of a second, yeah.
But he's right.
Well, hopefully that extra tenth of a second for reaction time makes some plays for Altuve.
I've not considered that, 0365, but I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. Because that is some – that's I always
that
say the
huge.
Hive or the most intelligent listener base in the city, and this is the kind of stuff as to why I say that.
Sure,
I use
say that
this
all
is
the time.
Evidence as to how we have or why we have the most sophisticated listenership in the city of Houston.
Actually,
a fat guy in his underwear.
No. That's what I was going to say.
Bad timing.
People are misconstruing that. He says the Hive as a whole.
No, I'm being sincere right now.
Right.
I know. I'm being a troll. I know.
Yeah, I was being sincere. That's high level thinking. It's low level thinking. He's thinking like a short guy.
No, I got the pun.
All right, 713-780-ESPN.
Turbo punch.
That's fine. Willabit. We haven't done Willabits in a while. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a Willabit when we come back. You never know what you're going to get. You just know it's going to be radio gold. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5.
It's the Killer Bees, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh my goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous bit.
It's time for Buzzkill Branham.
What? Okay. I think we're all on the same page with Lance McCullers, right? Like, we're all just, hey, we're wishful, we're hopeful, we're cautiously optimistic. If he's back, great. We'll believe him when we see it, right? I'm starting to see the same stuff with Luis Garcia that we used to see with Lance McCullers. Like, oh my goodness, this rotation's going to be out of this world once he comes back. Didn't we all fall for this last year? Like, there was tweets today that Lance McCullers is going to face live pitching or live hitting tomorrow. Luis Garcia, it's right around the corner whenever he's going to face live hitting. And everybody's like, oh, this rotation's going to be so awesome. Don't we need to wait until they actually pitch again in the big leagues?
Yes.
Let's temper our expectations.
Add Christian Javier to that, too. Because people will be back in August. No, he won't.
We heard this. Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia were supposed to be back last July.
Yeah.
And they still haven't made it back.
And they're still not going to start the season.
No.
We know the whole boy that cried wolf and everything. Have we not seen that the Astros still have the same medical staff? They still have the same communications department. We're still going to get the same updates. And everybody's still going to buy in that when they say it might happen or that when we get these updates, that it's really meaning that they're going to be that much closer to pitching. We've been through too many of these to even consider having those. I said it about Lance. I'll even say it about Garcia, but it's more so about Lance. I don't care, and I will not get a single bit of emotion until that man pitches in a baseball game for the Houston Astros.
I think it's what all the Astros... Look, it's okay to be optimistic, and it's okay to be like hopeful and all that stuff, but to like, well, once they get back, the Astros are going to be the best rotation in all of baseball. Who's to say they're going to be any good when they come back? Luis Garcia probably has a better chance to find who he was again. But Lance McCullers hasn't pitched in 2 years. He's coming off multiple arm surgeries that could impact his pitching. He's now in his early 30s. Like, it's cool to have the excitement and stuff, but let's temper our expectations. And I think most people are there with Lance McCullers, but I'm starting to see everybody get bullish about Luis Garcia's return. Let's wait.
Especially since the man had multiple setbacks before getting to this point. Like, it wasn't just that he was supposed to be back last year. It was that, okay, well, he's going to Florida. He's on a rehab assignment. And then they had to shut him down. And we're just now, when he was supposed to be back last July, now he's getting to a live bullpen. It's like he's behind for a reason. It's because things didn't go well in his recovery.
This is like the flare that goes up after what we went through with McCullers. Like, you've already been put on notice that he's McCullering. Like, he's already done enough last year by having the setbacks that he had that you should have no expectation at all until he puts on a uniform and starts throwing against hitters. And
on Instagram?
No. Against hitters in a game and then bounces back and is able to throw again, because we need to see multiple, especially with Garcia, we need to see multiples of these before we believe that there's a chance. Because Lance would come back and throw. He might even throw, you know, he might get real close, and then boom, then shut down again. And because, like you guys said, the multiples with McCullers, I have so much – my expectations are so much lower than with Garcia.
I mean, Garcia came back last year pitching two minor league games.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The track record of what we've already seen gone through with McCullers says that if Garcia's going to do that same kind of thing, I'm not too much more excited or hyped about his return than I am about McCullers.
Yeah, I'm buzzkilling both of them. I feel like McCullers is – I think everybody kind of buzzkills McCullers. But you got to do the same thing with Luis Garcia until they're back.
And I think you almost got to do it with Javier, too.
Okay. We got to do it with Javier, too.
Yeah.
He hasn't gone through the setbacks like the other two have at this point, but he's still coming off of Tommy John. It was still mid-season when he got it. Like, I wouldn't expect anything from him of significance this season.
I just haven't seen that conversation with Javier yet. Like, I haven't seen people get excited for Javier's return.
I hear people not there yet, right? Still occasionally away. Say, oh.
Yeah, like, I haven't seen that yet.
But I'm just saying, my overall outlook on it is, I'm gonna handle it the same way as the other two guys because, you know, we know what happens with medicals, with pitchers, with the Astros. Anyway, we've been through too much where you get your hopes up and then you get your dreams shattered on the fact that he could come back and be a significant piece. I'm not going to be anywhere near anticipatory and excited about Javier until he starts throwing against hitters, too.
And look, we'll track it and we'll have a conversation of what it would look like whenever they get back and all of that stuff. But cross that bridge when you get there. Like, once they're, hey, we're back. Okay, well, then how's it going to look like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, you should have the same thing with Javier. I just haven't seen that as much yet with Garcia. Like, I am not counting on any of those guys to come back. And then if they do come back, cool. And, like, I'm honored. Like, McCullers seems like he's going to pitch. If I had to bet, is Lance McCullers going to appear in a big league game? I would bet, yes, he appears in a big league game. Same thing with Luis Garcia. But I'm not going to sit here and count on it until it actually happens.
Yeah, I wouldn't pencil any one of those guys into being rotational pitchers right now this season. Because I'm not going to count on them at all.
Does it worry you a little bit that it's, I mean, maybe you guys disagree with my assessment on this, but does it worry you a little bit that it seems like the Astros might be penciling in some degree? I mean,
no.
they got obviously Wesneski in the Kyle Tucker trade as their, I guess, their fifth guy, but what do they have beyond that in, as far as, I guess you could bring up guys like Blue Ball or whoever
that's
for
it.
The minors, but
that's it.
But doesn't that feel like, so you don't feel like that's relying on McCullers or Garcia to definitely return?
No, I think that they like Gusto, I think, would be their top guy.
Right.
I think that they like Gusto. Would have appeared in a big league game last year had the season not ended in the rainout in game 162. They called Colton Gordon up to the 40-man roster. I believe that they view him as a rotational starter at some point, and then they do have Blue Ball, and then they have some other pitchers that they like that probably aren't there yet, like Ulloa or however you say his name is somebody that they really like, but his control's disastrous. Had a really bad spring training outing the other day too. So no, I don't think so. I think they're comfortable with the young guys. I think that their pitching staff is in a much better situation today than it was February 28, 2024.
Is that Colton Gordon kid, the kid we interviewed?
I believe, yeah, the lefty from UCF.
Yeah, he actually pitched really well yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot, but I don't think they're counting on either guy, nor should they. And I think that they have some good young arms, and obviously Wisniewski's going to get the first shot at it as the fifth starter.
Uh-huh.
And then it would be a luxury, like we've seen in the past, if you want to go to a six-man rotation, if you know that you get a guy, and whether McCullers or Garcia or both start to look like they have, you know, especially in the case of Garcia, their old stuff back, and they look like they could be dominant, then you got a good problem on your hands. You could do a lot of different things. But until we reach that point, I'm counting on my fifth starter right now being Wisniewski, and that's it.
Yeah, I don't even think it's like up for debate. Like,
no.
He's definitely your fifth, and that's kind of my concern. Like, we've had these conversations, like, I guess, like 2 years in a row in 23 and 24. It's like, oh, they have an abundance of pitching. Like, the conversation 1 year is why you didn't need Verlander to come back because you had so many pitching. And this, and what happens? The half that pitching gets destroyed, you know, at some point in the season. And this year, I mean, maybe the guys in the minors are the answer, and it's no problem. Or maybe Lance and Luis Garcia do come back and are fine. But right now, they're going into the season with less starting pitching depth at the major league level than I can remember over the last few years.
I think they have more starting pitching depth this year than they did last year.
At the major league level?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you'd be relying on a call-up, though.
Like, they used Ronel Blanco at the start of the year and had no idea if he was going to be a decent starter or not.
They didn't.
Like, he was a fringe starter relief. And then after that, you had nobody in the minors that were ready. You didn't have obviously you had Gusto and Blue Ball in the minors, but they weren't ready yet. They weren't even close to being ready. They had to use Jake Bloss, who was drafted less than 12 months prior for his starting debut. And, like, Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia were further away from being healthy than they currently are. I think they're in a much better start.
I'm talking to start the year, though, because Bloss wasn't when did Bloss make his first start? I thought it was further into the year.
That's my point, though. Like, they were in a way worse situation last year than they are this year.
What was the kid that they brought from? Wasn't he a UT guy that they brought? And then he just got absolutely annihilated.
He only got one
Blair
out.
Hinley?
Yes. He got one out.
Only got one out. He got obliterated. They sent him all the way back down to AA, and then they were done with him because they were desperate.
No, they went through like 30-something pitchers like in the first 2 months of last year. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but not much. Not much. Like, Ronel Blanco was their number five starter at the beginning of the year. I guess Arrighetti didn't start the year
on the rotation,
but he came up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Right away. I can't remember like who got hurt for him to do that.
Well,
maybe Arrighetti? I don't remember.
Yeah, Arrighetti got hurt within the first month. I don't remember exactly when it was.
Javier
also got hurt within the first month or so, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Javier started the year in the rotation. I forgot about him. He got hurt like 6 weeks into the year.
Yeah. Well,
remember he went to the IL. They brought him back. The neck injury.
They told us it was a neck injury.
Starts later.
Yep. And his velocity was already down. We were already questioning it.
Yeah, but you had nobody in the minors last year that were ready to make like an emergency start. I guess Arrighetti.
Arrighetti.
But after that, nothing. Nothing. Like, at least this year you have, I think, three guys with Gusto, Gordon, and Blue Ball. And look, we're not counting on Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia, but you hope that they would now add to that starting pitching depth as well. But we're not counting on them until
I don't think you can.
We can't
right, yeah.
count on them.
Plus, it would be stupid. Any Astros fans that get all overzealous about the fact that one, if not both, are going to be back and going to be jumping right into the rotation, you haven't watched enough of Astros baseball and all the trials and tribulations of, especially with those guys and what they've already gotten us close to thinking that they were going to be back to, and then they just had to be starting from scratch again.
Let's. A lot of people want to weigh in on this. 713-780-ESPN, HRNP, listener line. JP France, another one that got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
With the shoulder.
Well, that's what I mean. They had like seven starters, like at the major league level, like seven starters the last 2 years. This year they have five. That was my overall point.
I forgot all about France.
Yeah.
I really did.
He started, but he wasn't really even pitching well at the beginning, and then obviously got hurt too.
He's not throwing right now, is he?
No, he's not. I wouldn't. I would sign Jose Arrighetti to a minor league deal. Just saying.
I was just going to ask that. I was going to ask if he's still out there.
He's out there. He's not going to be anywhere near ready. He might not even pitch this year. But I wouldn't mind having him rehab in case he can get back. And plus, he's meant a lot to the organization. Brian has a buzzkill. Get to it on the other side. Also, people to weigh in on the Astros rotation. Lance McCullers, Luis Garcia. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.